which represents a very different cultural pattern from that which existed 100 years ago. Well, in talking with him, I've come around increasingly to talk about the technology of learning and science that exists in our culture. We actually have a system, a mechanics, if you like, for the conduct of research and teaching in this country, and I believe that it would be well worth our while to look at the technology of learning and science within the United States for certain insights, especially to become aware of certain omissions or become aware of certain tendencies that are the consequence of the technological devices that we've created for the carrying on of learning. Well, now, one can hardly speak of a pattern with reference to the study of man if that is to imply a scheme that involves the coverage of the parts, a scheme that involves a sense of coherence, an articulation of the several sections into any kind of rounded whole. I think it's immediately evident to us, if we stop and think for a moment, that the study of man in the academic and research scene in America now is conducted by, is split up among, a variety of very self-conscious so-called disciplines. And some of these are fairly old, going back even to the medieval foundations of our universities, the Greek and Latin language and the classics, the literature, philosophy, arts, and science, all arts and music all have at their core the educational experience of centuries ago in our universities. But other disciplines, as we all know, are the results of successive splinterings off of earlier organized bodies of knowledge, or are the results of sports that have come in, as it were, additions somewhat from the outside. You proceed from literature to history, and I think we can still remind some of our colleagues in political science that they, in turn, branched off from that shoot. As a matter of fact, it wasn't very long ago that there were still active on the scene here at the University of Illinois, men who, in a sense, participated in the birth of political science as a separate discipline. You have other sequences, philosophy leading to psychology, and the modern languages added to the ancient languages, and then latecomers like sociology and anthropology. Now, the important thing to notice about these disciplines is that they are very self-conscious, that they have arisen, to be sure, at different times and places, and each one has its set of historical circumstances or accidents which help to explain its rise. Each of these disciplines tends to have its pioneers who pointed the way, and the propagators who brought in recruits to carry on the new kind of study which was being created. It's had the distinguished figures who were the creators of the methodology characteristic of the discipline. It's had its high priests who helped to set and maintain certain concepts of standards for work within the given discipline. It's had its routines, some of them very hard and very fixed, as a little experience with the executive committee of the graduate school would well demonstrate, for propagating the next generation to carry on the discipline. And certainly each discipline has its own sense of importance, and lamentably it often has buried within it also an intense jealousy of other disciplines. Each of these disciplines tends to live in isolation despite the fact that they often deal with common materials, and despite the fact that they frequently respond to general fashions or ideas. They each absorb these ideas into their own context and go on without a sufficient indication of the common body of attitude that underlies this development. And so they become fixtures in the academic scene. Each of these disciplines then responds to its own inner dynamic and organizes itself for effective action as a discipline into one of those sacrosanct institutions which is known as a learned society. And so in an organization like the ACLS, we occasionally have to go through a ponderous procedure by which we decide whether or not a given discipline has organized itself into a society which is stable enough. I'm never quite sure just what that means, but nonetheless there are people who think that this is terribly important, so that it has come of age, has acquired its independent stature, and is now ready to be admitted to the charmed circle of the learned societies. We have regular mechanics for ceremonial induction of these organized disciplines into the accepted circles. I shall not be invidious by referring within the University of Illinois to certain disciplines that have been on the edge of respectability. Having been away for 2 years, I'm not quite sure in certain instances whether they're really in now and they're first-class citizens or are just hanging on the fringes waiting for the established disciplines to speak courteously to them. But if you'll think for a moment, I think in every branch of the university, whether it be on the scientific side or the human side, there are these new disciplines coming into existence and begging to be accepted as responsible and independent parties in the academic scene. Well, with this kind of a history behind us, it's no wonder, then, that the whole study of man really appears on some kind of on short analysis, I think, to be characterized essentially by its lack of plan, by its lack of coherence, by its lack of a sense of articulation into any kind of a whole. This is why there's very little evidence to show in the university of paramount concern with the best or the better ways to achieve a rounded and full study of man in the light, obviously not of eternity, which we're not quite sure we can control, but at least of what we now know about the possibilities for the study of mankind. Now, do not mistake me. I'm not suggesting here that all these developments within the several disciplines are bad. The organization into disciplines has furthered many good causes. But I don't think that we need to regard this process as one that embodies perfection and that is not susceptible of periodic reform in the light of more general concepts of what ought to be. I'm merely saying, in other words, that these organizations that deal with fragmentary aspects of mankind should be subsumed into a broader concept of a study of man, with some of their less desirable features restrained, and with some kind of inner communication system provided. Now, this might seem as though this is social planning coming into the area of the intellect, and I certainly do not mean that. I'm sure that there are some who will react immediately and say, why, this would stifle the possibilities of free inquiry. Well, we hear a great deal about the necessity of maintaining free inquiry. One of the things that distresses me is that there's so little of it as I look around the academic scene and talk with people from a variety of disciplines. I have become increasingly impressed with what I think to be something that approaches a fact, that the pattern for moving forward in terms of free inquiry is so rigidly set by a variety of conventions that operate within the academic world that to speak of free inquiry as though it were just the roving imagination uninhibited by any kind of restraint is to overlook the tremendous restraints and rigidities that actually exist now within the academic scene. So that I would merely point out at this moment that let's not just wave the idea that this is standing in the way of free inquiry about too readily. I think it calls for a closer analysis. Now, I'm not going tonight to suggest to you a fixed and arbitrary scheme. Far from it. The best plan that we might evolve for a rounded study of man would surely have flexibility, would have an open-ended quality to it, to permit the development even of new disciplines, new insights that would come from time to time as various imaginative individuals saw possibilities which had been missed by earlier generations. But even these new insights, the bases of new organized approaches to knowledge, of new disciplines, could conceivably find their place within an adjusted plan. Well, I'm not going tonight, then, to try to present to you a plan. I think we've actually thought far too little about it to have very good notions of what that plan should be. But I would like to suggest tonight certain general ideas which might appear as elements in such a plan and suggest that we look at them against the general context of academic behavior as it exists in the university and college today. I am going to search for certain similarities and differences among the disciplines associated with the study of man, which might ultimately suggest compensating elements which should be included within any rounded notion which we might subsequently develop. And if we do this, we may be in a position to move ultimately toward a greater feeling for the relationship which ought to exist among the many parts that could constitute a study of man better than that which we now have. Now, some may say that we already have such an organization. We have some suggestion of a planned approach here, in that within most universities and colleges, and this one is no exception, we have the division of the humanities and we have the division of the social sciences. And I take it that we are gathered here tonight under the auspices of one of these divisions. So I hope I shall not be interpreted tonight as speaking against the parentage of the sponsoring organization that brings us together here. I think there is something here in this reference to the humanities on the one hand and the social sciences on the other. But it seems to me that the division that we speak of has practically no meaning at all at the level of graduate education, and has a very limited meaning still in most places at the level of undergraduate education. Actually, the fragmentation of knowledge, the divisions, are so sharp that the category, the division of humanities or the division of social sciences, is really a grab bag that does not contain very much content. It's not really an effective organization of knowledge as it presently exists. So let us nonetheless work a bit with these labels that are so well established in the academic scene of the humanities and the social sciences, the humanist and the social scientist, to see what meaning they might conceivably have in our present arrangements, to see what they can suggest for the study of man. Now, I think there are immediate and obvious difficulties as soon as we begin to speak of the humanities and the social sciences as though they were fields in the conventional sense. It might be that in the first round, if we were to engage in this little bit of classification practice, we would get considerable agreement that the social sciences would include certain fields such as political science, economics, geography, psychology, sociology. Maybe we'd begin to get into a little argument about anthropology, at least in some institutions, and if one judges from certain anthropologists like the late Ruth Benedict. On the other hand, when you turn to the humanities, we might get some immediate agreement that the humanities would include the departments involving language, linguistics, literature, philosophy, religions, art, and music. And then we come, of course, to my own particular discipline, history, which has, in most institutions, managed to play both ends against the middle and lie in between. Anthropology may fall into that area in certain other institutions as well. Well, when we begin to look into this, we soon realize that there are aspects, just to take the social sciences, for example, there are aspects of the work of the fields of social science that don't quite seem to fit this category. Or what about the aesthetic materials that become involved in psychology? The whole area of social theory, political economic theory, historical approach within political science, economics, and you simply can't ignore the intimate relationships which have to be established with the humanistic disciplines when you begin to consider those aspects of the social sciences. It seems to me, then, that as a division among fields, this label system has marked defects. As a matter of fact, it seems to produce as many problems as it solves, and in the long run, it may not be very useful. I think, nonetheless, we may feel that lurking underneath this, there is something. There is a difference. And I feel that we might get a little farther along here in determining relationships among the disciplines that would make up the study of man if we were to think now, not in terms of fields, but in terms of a division in the types of problems that are dealt with by the humanist on the one hand and the social scientist on the other. Now, these are not finite, limited, and very definite. But I think we might be able to identify some of these vaguely felt differences by establishing a series of ranges and concluding that the humanist tends to be at this end and the social scientist at that end of a given range. Now, one of these ideas that is certainly epidemic in the land, it's not strictly academic, it has a very profound effect, in fact, upon the financing